Our next speaker, Paul E. Peterson, is the Henry Lee Shattuck Professor of Government and Director of the Program on Education Policy and Governance at Harvard University and Editor-in-Chief of Education Next, a journal of opinion and research on education policy. The author or editor of more than 100 articles and 22 books, he received his PhD from the University of Chicago and was a professor for many years there in the departments of political science and education. He's also been involved in the Department of Education Independent Review Panel to advise the agency in evaluating the No Child Left Behind Act, among his many, many other activities in this field. And introducing him, I'll also note to you, because I know it's a question that comes up at conferences, we were unable to print out these slides in a format that looked clean, but we're watch this space, www.empirecenter.org. We will post his PowerPoint in both PowerPoint and PDF format within the next day or two, so you will be able to find it and download it within the 2 days of this conference. And so with that, Dr. Peterson.
Good morning. I was very pleased to hear that New York has number four as the best, because I'm afraid that's where the Red Sox are going to be in the division this year. So we're going to chant four. Okay, so if we can get this. So 10 accountability lessons is the theme that I have organized my thoughts around. And I wanted to begin on a positive note, because I'm going to be quite critical about the way we go about accountability so far in the United States. But I want to place that in the context of saying some good things about accountability. And so my first lesson is, overall, accountability seems to have had some positive effects in the states that have introduced it. So if the next slide would be put up. This shows the states which in the 1990s introduced accountability, as compared to the states that did not introduce accountability. And some just reported results, and some gave rewards to schools that did well, and some did nothing at all. And as these, so a study was done using the National Assessment of Educational Progress, the NAEP, which we're going to talk about. I'm sure many of you in the room know what the NAEP is. It's the nation's report card, and it is the only way we can really monitor what's going on across the country and compare one state with another. And this basically looked at what happened to fourth graders 4 years later when they were in eighth grade in mathematics on the NAEP. So it was a way of sort of seeing what happened over those 4 years in states that had accountability and states that did not have accountability. And it's the best study that's ever tried to get an overall assessment of the impact of accountability. Now, this is before No Child Left Behind. It was when the states were first beginning to experiment with this. And it shows that, and those are not massive gains. They're modest gains of about a percentage point or two. So it's a plus. It's not like you get excited about it, that this is going to transform the American educational system. But since accountability systems are not that expensive, I'll get to that in a second, it's a reform that even in its early beginning phases seemed to have had some positive effects. The next lesson is on the next slide. It's a further point on this. So we can now compare what's going on in some states with the national average. And the two states I thought I would put up there are New York and Florida. And I emphasize Florida because Florida has put together what I think is one of the best accountability systems in the United States. And it has introduced a number of other educational reforms as well, so you can't be sure whether it's just accountability, but the accountability system, which I'll be talking about as we go forward here, is has been a very central part of the reform effort in Florida. And so the Florida bars there are the red bars, And the blue ones are the United States as a whole, and the yellow one is New York. And this tells you what happened in fourth grade math and fourth grade reading, eighth grade math and eighth grade reading in Florida as compared to what was happening nationally. And you can see it nationally, math scores have been going up at the fourth grade level over the last decade. But they've gone up even more in Florida, and they've gone up a little bit more in New York, but not as done as well as Florida. So you can see the same thing, not as big a gain in reading, but the same pattern. Eighth grade, the gains, the differences are not as large. Florida's still outpacing things. In eighth grade reading, nobody's doing very well. That's the overall pattern. Let's go on to the next slide and look at seeing what's happening to African-American students. Even bigger gains there. And they're not in eighth grade math. Actually, New York looks better there. New York doesn't look good at all in reading in math. And let's look at Hispanics. Hispanics are a difficult group to interpret because there's so much change occurring in that population with the migration coming in, and especially in Florida. So New York actually looks pretty good for the Hispanics, but whether or not that's really what's going on in schools or whether that's something else that's happening in terms of migration patterns is hard to disentangle. So lesson two, accountability as we know it is not transforming schools. I've sort of already made that point, but let me show you in the next slide what I mean by that, which is by the time students get to graduate from high school, they're in mathematics, since 1970, their test scores have not really gone up much at all. They went down to 82, then they came back. So they've sort of recovered where they were originally, maybe up a tiny bit. And so that's the overall pattern. Now, if you look at black students, you see that they made really substantial gains during the 1980s. And then in 1990, they tailed off again. And so we didn't sustain the pattern of closing the test score gap that we had established for the 17-year-old population. Let's look at reading because it's even more dramatic there. There you see very little gains at all, and you see these really remarkable gains by African Americans, then followed by a decline in the reading scores with a similar pattern for Hispanics. The message that you take away from this when you look at 17-year-olds is that whatever was happening at the elementary school level, it's not being carried through high school. And if you look at graduation rates, the same pattern emerges. It's now evident that we have lower graduation rates in 2000 than we had in 1990. In 1970, we were the world's leader in high school graduation rates. Our high school graduation rates did not improve much after that, and in fact, in 1990, they started going down. The rest of the world, meanwhile, has caught up to us. We are now at the industrial world average instead of being the leading country in the world. And that's also true of our test scores, by the way, compared to other countries. We're now at the international average. We're no longer the leading country in the world. So there's, if you want to think about this in terms of the world as flat kind of context, you know, there's just a terrible need to do something about our educational system that we have not been doing over the last decade or two. My third lesson here is accountability three. Lesson three is accountability is cost effective. And I did have a slide that I somehow didn't make into the packet, which brings out the evidence that if you're going to have class size reduction, it's going to be extremely expensive. If to reduce class size from 24 to 16 is going to increase the cost of education by 50%. And the class size reduction study that everybody is relying upon, the Tennessee STAR study, does show that you get gains that are about 20% of a standard deviation, which isn't bad. But the cost of that intervention is just, the 8% increase is not going to be enough to get the kind of class size reduction that they got in the experiment in Tennessee. It would be a lot more bigger intervention. So what makes accountability the very attractive strategy for reform is that if it can actually be done correctly, it cannot be, it's not a very expensive thing to do. Cost of education per pupil runs around $10,000 in the United States on average, and the cost of testing, introducing a testing program, costs about $100 at most on average per pupil in a given year. So it's a trivial part of the total pattern. So putting some effort into getting an accountability system done correctly is well worth the cost. Okay, on to lesson four. So the NCLB measuring stick, which is one that's having a lot of influence in New York, is the one that is terribly flawed. And one way it's flawed is that the standards vary state by state. So if we go on to the next slide, this is a hard one for you to read. When you can see it in detail, I can't even see where New York is on there. Maybe
somewhere in here.
A little lower. Yeah. Right there.
So if, I think we gave it a what?
D minus C, C, D plus C.
Yeah.
So Massachusetts, I want you to say, is better than the Boston Red Sox. It's right up there at the top in terms of our standards. Actually, Massachusetts has introduced some very effective accountability reforms, and one of them is they do set very high standards for students. Florida's not much better than New York is, and most states are at that level. Now, this is all comparing it to the NAEP standards, the ones that were set up nationally as the correct way of assessing whether a student really knows what they're supposed to know in fourth grade or eighth grade. And when you compare what the states have done, they have really set much lower standards than those that have been set by the nation. So one of the things that people are talking about with No Child Left Behind reauthorization is, should we have a national standard? Where should that national standard be? Because right now, Johnny can read in North Carolina, but he can't read in South Carolina. I mean, the same performance level will give you a completely different interpretation as to whether or not Johnny can read. So, and that's a huge problem, this great variation among the states. Well, there's nothing that New York by itself can do about that, but it is something that's affecting the way people are thinking about No Child Left Behind. So if we move on to the next slide, one of the biggest problems is that parents are very confused by the NCLB measuring stick because it conflicts with state accountability systems. Now, in Florida is where I've looked at this the most closely, where they have a very simple reporting system, A, B, C, D, and F. And then in the case of No Child Left Behind, it's whether or not you make adequate yearly progress, whatever that means, and whether or not the school is in need of improvement. Well, all schools are in need of improvement. So, I mean, these bureaucratic or legislative compromised phrases are language that has very little meaning out there in contrast to the very simple A, B, C, D, F system in Florida. But when you have the two systems running at the same time, it can lead to a lot of confusion. Somebody's actually looked in Georgia. I mean, if you have a theory of accountability, it goes sort of like this. A democratic theory of accountability is test scores improve, everybody is happy, school board members get reelected with bigger margins than ever, and the community supports its schools. Test scores go down, the community's unhappy, school board members are defeated, they bring in a new school board, they fix it up. That's sort of our sort of democratic theory of accountability. Well, so somebody's actually looked in South Carolina at whether or not this actually takes place. In the first year, it did. There was some evidence that it made life more difficult for school board members if their schools weren't performing well. But after the first time out the door, these test scores have had no effect because the news media has been confused as to what they mean, and there's conflicts between the federal standards and the state standards and the definition of whether it's a good school or a bad school, and so people are so confused. Somebody's also done a study of this in Louisiana and has found even before the hurricane, that you got the same confusion, so that accountability system had no effect on how people chose candidates in local elections. We haven't done that in New York so far, but I would be surprised if we found anything different. So let's go on to the next slide. Here is the way it works actually in Florida with No Child Left Behind. They, in the year we did this study, which was a couple years ago, three quarters of the state of the schools in the state of Florida were said to be not making adequate yearly progress, and only one quarter was making adequate yearly progress. Meanwhile, the state of Florida said that these are its A schools, and these are its B schools, and these are its C schools. So three quarters or more of the schools in the state were said to get an A, B, or a C. Over a majority were getting an A and a B. And those that were doing very poorly, oh, I know, these are the A's here. And these are the A's that were making adequate yearly progress, and these are the A's that were not making adequate yearly progress. So you had about half of the A schools were not making adequate yearly progress. So which do you believe? Do you believe that your school got an A, or do you believe that your school isn't making adequate yearly progress? Well, the two accountability systems are giving you completely different signals. So one thing No Child Left Behind has to figure out is a way to get its accountability system and the state accountability system on the same page. And that's an issue that New York should try to work out as it moves forward with this, is to see whether or not you can get the Department of Education, which isn't necessarily highly responsive to state officials when they go and talk to them about this problem, but it is something which they really need to address as they revise the law and as New York begins to move its plan forward. So if we go on to the next slide, NCLB, don't do what NCLB does, because they do a terrible job of identifying good schools. The next slide will show that. Here is what we did. We actually have data from Florida that allows us to tell whether or not kids are learning in that school, because we know how well the student did last year and how well the student did at the end of this year. So we can compare last year's performance with this year's performance to see how much the child learned over the course of that year. Well, my definition of a good school is one where kids are learning. Now, are they learning a lot? Good school, a little, okay, and not at all, bad. Okay, so this would seem to me to be a very straightforward way of defining what a good school is. It's sometimes called the value-added model. It's sometimes called the growth model. There's variations on this, but the concept itself is very, very simple. How much is a particular child learning in a school in a given year? And what's the average for all the kids in that school, and what's the average for the lowest performing kids in that school? Well, if you were to take NCLB in Florida, their definition of whether or not that school is making adequate yearly progress, and you then decided to send your kid to that school because it was, and not to another school because it wasn't, you would be making a mistake 30% of the time. 30% of the time, you would be making a mistake, because the school that you decided not to send your child to was actually doing a better job than the one that was defined by No Child Left Behind as making adequate yearly progress. Well, why is this? Because No Child Left Behind measures performance of a school based on whether or not a certain percentage of kids reach a certain proficiency level. Well, that reaching a certain proficiency level is really easy for kids who come from families who are educating them at home, and extremely difficult for kids who aren't getting that same help from the family. And so there are some schools that have to deal with children who have huge learning deficits, and other schools are fortunate enough to be working with kids who do not have educational deficits. So the second group gets a total free pass on No Child Left Behind. They can be a lousy school where kids are not learning much at that school, but they happen to have excellent students arriving on the scene because they come from a family background that's providing them with the support that they need. So because of this level measure, this percent proficient measure, which is also being used here in New York, as Tom Carroll just explained to you, It's misidentifying in Florida, and I'm sure the same thing is happening in New York, although I can't prove it. It's mismeasuring 30% of the time, which is, of two schools is the better school. Now, the Florida system is better. I won't explain this chart because it takes too long. The Florida system is better, but it's not perfect because half of the Florida score is based on percent proficient and half is on this growth or value added model. And I've been trying to encourage the people in Florida to move completely to the value added model because then they could really nail which schools are doing the best job of improving student test performance. Well, to do that, you've got to have the information to do that. And so let's go on to the next lesson. For accountability to work, states need to build a database that can track students over time. It's absolutely essential. You will never have a decent accountability system until you put that into place. It's not easy to put it into place. It took Florida 4 years to put it into place. It is now a terrific system. It can still be further improved. I've worked with the data. It makes sense. You can organize it. You can look and see what's happening in specific schools and specific classrooms. You can see how effective every teacher is in Florida. Using this data, we have been able to identify, we don't identify names, but we've actually looked at this data and we are able to tell you the characteristics of the teachers who are effective and the characteristics of the teachers who are not effective. The city of New York has begun to put this together, so it's actually being done in parts of New York, and somebody has just shown that whether or not you're a traditionally certified teacher or a Teach for America teacher or an alternatively certified teacher or not certified at all doesn't make any difference in terms, on average, in terms of student performance. So you can learn a lot about your educational policies once you put into place a tracking system that allows you to track how much students are learning from 1 year to the next. So the first thing to do is to put together an accountability system that expects this, and the second thing to do is to put into place a data collection system. It can be done, it has been done, it's being done in North Carolina, it's being done in Texas, it's being done in Chicago, it's been done in Florida. I know Florida the best. It can be done in New York State. I don't believe New York State doesn't have the capacity to do what these other states are doing. Okay, so the next lesson is schools respond if accountability contains a penalty. Well, this is a point that Tom Carroll made as well. If we go on to the next slide, the evidence for that comes from the Florida voucher program because some schools were said if you got an F 2 years in a row, you would have to go into the voucher program. That no longer applies because of the state court ruling, but the time we did this study, we found that once a school got one F, threatened by a voucher system, if it was to get a second F, that school improved dramatically relative to the other schools in the state. And we had a way of doing it so we could make that estimation pretty precise. And 10% of a standard deviation gain is a pretty big gain. It's half as big as the class size reduction one, and it didn't cost, the cost of introducing this is minimal. So what kind of choice system you want to put into place? Is an interesting question that the state might want to address. But some kind of a choice system for those who are attending failing schools, such as under No Child Left Behind, is a way of motivating schools to pay attention when their scores are very low. I don't think you should have a lot of F schools. I think one of the problems with No Child Left Behind is there's so many schools that are said to be not making adequate yearly progress that nobody really knows what to make of all of that. So a good accountability system should have multiple cutting points so you can identify the very best schools and also the very worst schools, and then you should have some intermediate ranks as well. Okay, moving on. Lesson 9, student accountability is more effective than school accountability. I know I'm running out of time, so I'll run over this point quickly since it's really not on your agenda, though I think you should take pride in New York that you do have a high school diploma that requires passage of the Regents exam, because I think there's good evidence that that is more effective than probably any other kind of accountability system. I think one of the things that the governor said that I think needs to be thought about is, yes, adults should be held accountable when students fail, but you shouldn't let students off the hook either. I think that teachers will feel a lot better if they know that students are caring about their own education and are taking responsibility for our own education. And I think sometimes our rhetoric is, students are widgets. We just pour this stuff into their heads. But they aren't that way. They're human beings. They respond to incentives too. So let's just look at the evidence on how they do respond to incentives. Theodore Sizer, the wonderful educator who created charter schools and created great public schools and was a great leader in many ways, once said the student is the crucial actor, whether we adults like it or not. He or she decides what has been purveyed. Let's go on to the next slide. This is in Chicago. Once they said, you're not going to get into fourth grade unless you do well enough in third grade. And this is what happened to test scores in math in Chicago compared to what would have happened had that not been put into place. Let's go on to the next slide. And this is in reading the same pattern. Let's go on to the next slide. This is comparing what happened into Chicago after that in other Midwestern cities that didn't introduce that same plan. Let's go on to the next slide. This is from Florida. They did the same thing in Florida, put into this place as you're going to be held back if you don't do well on this. And this is what happened to the test scores. This is in the state's own test, and this is in the Stanford 9, which is a nationally normed test. The jump in reading wasn't as great as the jump in math. But that happened from one year to the next. Once you change the expectations, let's go on to the next one, which is sort of interesting because these are the ones that were held back, and they actually did better than the ones that were not held back. So it wasn't like this harmed these kids. It was that they really needed another year at that grade level in order to grasp the material. And let's go on to the next one. This is an international study that looks at what happens when countries have comprehensive examinations, like the Regents exam here in the old Regents exam, closer to the old Regents exam than the new one, that it actually, at the eighth grade level, has a huge positive effect on the test score performance of kids in those countries. So if the one thing that differentiates countries around the world who do the best at the age of 15 or the age of 13 is whether or not when they are going to graduate from high school, they're going to have to take a serious examination. Not one of these pencil and paper tests, but a serious examination with long questions and serious answers. You got to know your Shakespeare in order to pass the test kind of examination. It has a huge impact on how much effort young people put into their education in adolescence. Let's go on to the next one. This is from Massachusetts. In Massachusetts, we put into place high school graduation exam in this year, and this is what happened to 10th grade test scores. This is what happened to test scores at the middle school level and the elementary school level. They did not improve because they weren't being held accountable. And this is the pattern that had taken place before the test, and then it shot up at the 10th grade level afterwards. And it keeps going up. Every year it keeps going up, which is amazing. Well, that's bringing us down to 06 there. So I think I have one more lesson at the end here. And this is a bold one. If you get the accountability system right, you can then begin to hold teachers accountable and principals accountable. You can't do that with the current accountability system. It would not be fair. So it's pointless to start holding teachers accountable until you get the measuring stick correct. Thank you.
We actually have a decent amount of time for questions, and I would only ask that you please go to the microphone in the center of the room here. It's a good opportunity to explore these issues in detail, but if you could go to the mic and identify yourself before your question.
I appreciate it.
Go right ahead. Yes, that's working.
Joel Margolis, private citizen. On one of the earliest charts where you're comparing New York and Florida, Could you tell me what the metric was on the ordinate? There was no indication. Everything else was sigma, but that one there was no, you know, it was like 15 and compared to 40, and I couldn't tell what the metric was that you were comparing it to.
Let's put that slide up if we can. Can we go all the way back to the beginning?
Yeah, that one. Score, but what was the score?
This is the average change in the test score on the day.
Oh, okay.
Well, the average score is something like what? 300?
Well, you know, it's best to think about these in standard deviations rather than, because every test is different, so it can be very confusing. And the NAEP, the standard deviation tends to be around 25 to 30, depending on the test. And so one standard deviation is the difference between a fourth grader and an eighth grader. So 25% of a standard deviation is a full year of learning at this point in their schooling. And so these are non-trivial. These are pretty big. These are, you know, like a half to a full year of learning difference if you're in that 15 to 20 range.
Are there standard errors around those numbers? Oh,
yeah, but you remember, these are huge samples, so the standard errors are very small.
Hi, I'm Allison Armagarb from the Rockefeller Institute, and you mentioned that some jurisdictions put in high-stakes tests and retained students in grade based on their test performance. And you showed that it didn't have a negative effect, that they showed learning gains the next year. I'm wondering what your sense is of the long-term effects on the students and the likelihood that they'll graduate?
Well, we don't know because this was only introduced recently. But when the retained students actually do better the next year, then those who were passed on, you know, that's an optimistic indication. But one doesn't know what the long-term impact would be, and too soon to tell.
Dr. Peterson, the last lesson you gave was holding the teachers, principals, et cetera, accountable. I think the next panel might talk about this, but one of the things the governor here is introducing is this idea of a contract for excellence, where, if I remember correctly, the statutory language in his proposal says that henceforth superintendent contracts must have a provision by which the commissioner of education under various consequences can remove a superintendent. I mean, is that the kind of, that seems very bold to me, and is that the kind of thing you're talking about? I mean, is that ultimately the way? Because these are all dictated by labor contracts right now. So unless that's negotiated in either at the district level or mandated at the state level going forward, I was wondering if you could say something about that and whether any other state has things like that.
Well, I don't know exactly what the governor has proposed or how it's going to evolve as people begin to discuss it. But one thing that is clear to me is that holding schools accountable is holding an it accountable. And you can only hold people accountable. So I don't quite understand what it means to hold a school accountable, because the only way you can hold a school accountable is to shut it down. Well, how many schools are we going to shut down? I mean, that you just can't shut a school down. I mean, this is a physical facility. Now, you can restructure it. No Child Left Behind says we're going to restructure these schools. Well, how many schools can you restructure? That's an extraordinarily difficult thing to do, and nobody really quite knows how to do it. And right now, the way this law is being interpreted, when they do restructure, schools are doing hardly anything at all in most of the cases. So as best we can tell, that's the evidence we have so far on that. And so holding schools accountable is just a very odd thing, but holding teachers accountable in the sense that you know how much learning is happening in a particular classroom. And let's say 3 years running, we find out that the children that take from this teacher is learning a lot. These kids are learning 1 year more than other kids taking classes from other teachers, which is actually happening in New York City today. If you take a class from the top 25% of teachers in New York City, they learn 1 year more in a given year than those who take teachers in the, from the bottom 25%. 1 year's difference. Now, if you went to those, that first group and said, you know, the kids are really learning from you and they're doing this year after year, we're going to give you a raise. And you went to those at the bottom and you said, you need to rethink what you're doing. And you work with them and you ask them to rethink their doing. And if they improve, that's great. And if they don't, then you really need to take a look at whether or not they belong in the educational business or when they shouldn't go into some other business as well. Now, that seems to me to be a vastly more sensible accountability system than trying to hold schools accountable.
Joel Miller, a member of the Education Committee in the New York State Assembly. I think, you know, we've been talking about a lot of things, but the actual specifics have been totally left out. Not your specifics, you've been excellent, but this whole thing about what the governor has proposed, a school district is only going to be held liable if they get over a 10% increase in funding. Very few school districts in the entire state meet that requirement. And then it's 4 years before a superintendent could be replaced and 6 years before the school board can be replaced, and it's not going to be the same people. I mean, everything you're saying is absolutely so. But if you look in New York City with the union structure, the better teachers are in the better schools, the least prepared teachers, the least experienced teachers are put into the worst schools. So even there, the statistics are somewhat skewed. And if, in fact, we don't take into account just what you mentioned before, that kids with certain backgrounds have a greater potential to learn than kids without that same background, it becomes very difficult to hold the teacher accountable if, in fact, the teacher is teaching in a school where kids are coming in where there is absolutely no preparation at home. So I think everything you say about measuring is absolutely correct. Everything you say about assessing and demanding results is very, very important. But the actual statistics that go into defining each body and each group and how you're going to hold who accountable for what isn't nearly as clear when you look at just what the governor really proposed and how the funding works out. Most school districts are going to get 3%. Some of the big cities are going to get less than 10%. Very few schools under this contract are going to be held accountable at all. And there's not that much money. $7 billion over 4 years or over 5 years, where just slightly less than $3 billion was already cost-driven aid. We've raised school funding to the same amount before Governor Spitzer got there with this plan. So, you know, I think there's a lot that we have to do on how we educate and structure that before we start firing teachers and firing superintendents. It may sound good. But we may have more firings than education.
Well, I take that more as a comment than as a question. I do agree that we have to get the measuring stick right first. If you're trying to get people to change their behavior, and you're measuring what they're doing incorrectly, you're going to get results you don't want.
Hello, my name is Leanne Mertzloft, and I'm with Options with Learning. And in the Capital District, we provide teacher training, and we service directly, including myself, the children who have either been forgotten or believe that cannot learn to read, or is really, I think so, what it comes down to is what we need to get to the core of is that teacher. And we need to inspire that teacher to believe that every child can learn. And when I do teacher trainings and when we service these children, the first thing I notice is there's that big belief that they just can't teach that child, that that child just cannot learn. So there needs to be an inspiration, an incentive to inspire that those children can learn. And the teachers who make the biggest gains in whatever school you are in, whether you're in the best school or the least school, are the teachers who believe that every child can learn. And it's that child that proves success, not the funding, but it's that one individual.
Much truth in that.
Yep. I think that concludes our time for questioning. Thank you very much, Dr. Peterson.